I'm Eilif Johansen, the project leader of the Nordic EdTech Network project funded by Nordic Innovation. I'm very pleased to be interviewing Roger Larsen via Skype today, so we hope Skype will be nice to us and give us high audio quality and that we'll face no technical challenges. Roger and I have had at least two Skype conversations in the last couple of years about various EdTech developments. And I met Roger many, many years ago at one of the many online EDUCA conferences in Berlin that he attended and where he gave keynote presentations about Fronter, among other things. Roger has more extensive leadership experience in EdTech than any other Norwegian I know. So it's great to have you share some of your wisdom and perspectives with us, Roger. And I know our Nordic EdTech community will be very interested in hearing your take on things. So welcome to our podcast series, Roger.
Thank you so much, Eilif. Really appreciated that.
First, can you start by taking a few minutes and maybe share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background, including some of your recent and current EdTech activities?
Okay, yeah, sure. So I've been in what you call the EdTech space basically since 95, 96. So it really starts to be close to, or around about 20 years. It wasn't called EdTech at the time, but...
E-learning.
E-learning, yes. And it started really with CD-ROM. Whoever remembers that, and creating online courses on CD-ROM, and then moved over to the internet or World Wide Web when that became more mature. So making courses, online courses and so on, being published as standalone assets, either on CD-ROM or on websites. But right. It really occurred to me back in 97-ish, 96, 97, that you needed some kind of systems around it. A course online was not enough. You needed some kind of management structure around it. And in fact, that management structure was the same functionality regardless of what the course was. So the course content would be different, but the management structure you needed around it would be the same, such as user management, class management, assignment, assessment, gradebook, reporting, and so on. Analytics, although at that time we didn't call it analytics, but that kind of functionality. So I started to reflect on that, and I decided to actually create a suite of tools providing these functionalities, and that became a company that I founded in 98 called Fronter, which was a learning management system. So that really led me on to approximately 10-year journey creating a learning management system until I left that after it had been acquired by Pearson in 2009. I worked a couple of years in Pearson and then I left that project. And I, towards the tail end of that Fronter journey, I started a couple of EdTech companies, and I since then have started one or two projects that I've been involved in. So I really, LMS has been a big part of my 20-year journey, but also some course production companies, content companies. So that, I guess that basically summarizes my journey till date.
Okay. Now, in addition to having a great deal of experience leading the EdTech companies, you've been a CEO, but you've also been board member of a number of companies. You have investor experience in EdTech over a long time period. So what can you say about where we are today in EdTech? And are you happy or unhappy with how far we come? And what are you seeing today that you feel are both interesting and promising and that's out there?
I would love to say that I'm happy, but I'm actually, I would have expected and hoped that all the technology we have at hand would have produced better learning outcomes by now. I still think we haven't really been able to harness technology to such a point where we can say that it really, really makes a difference in education. I still think it's the teacher that really makes a difference. So I think edtech companies need to think much more about the ed than the tech.
Right.
I'm a little bit tired about all the tech. Let's talk about ed. That's what matters. And I think if you have an edtech proposition, forget the tech, and really find how is this improving teaching and or learning. How is this making the teacher more efficient? How is this changing the experience for the learner? And figure that out. Technology is just an enabler.
Right.
So it's
right.
Too much focus on the tech, and that can often become, therefore, a lot of bells and whistles, but it doesn't give the impact that it needs to give
right.
in education. So I think the community needs to be much more focused on impact, educational impact, and be cynical about that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I'm sure this is something we're going to be talking about in Kristiansand quite a bit as well. Now, much of your edtech leadership, as we talked about, and your experience has been in connection with Frontier and now Avantador, which are both learning management systems, and perhaps have not, at least the general perception is that that's more for the instructor and for the management as opposed to maybe helping the learner, the user. Many of these systems not being perhaps as user-focused as they should be, at least that a lot of people would have liked to have seen them. But given that you're working now with this new company, you must still feel that they're interesting and large and still large unexploited market opportunity in this either LMS or learning platform segment of the market. So could you say a little bit about why you're still bullish on this market segment, which many analysts, I think, feel are pretty crowded, maybe even too crowded?
Yeah, I completely agree with you in the LMS definition. That's crowded, and that's yesterday's news.
Mm-hmm.
LMS, Learning Management System. You mentioned Avantador, which is actually called Schooler now, is not an LMS. It's a radically different approach, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but I'll just comment on one thing you said. LMSs is and have always been a management system. It's never been intended to be a learner-centric system.
Right.
But those that have kind of criticized it because it's not learner-centric, well, they're quite right in the criticism. The problem is that they haven't really understood that it was never meant to be a learner-centric system. It's always used there to manage the learning process. And that is enable the institution to organize the learning process in an efficient way, enable the instructor or the teacher to give them some tools to manage their particular course or something. It was really never designed for the learner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to keep that in mind and just smell the word, learning management system. It wasn't pedagogical system, it wasn't content delivery system, it wasn't... But I know a lot of vendors kind of sold it as a good learner's system, and this is what would change the learner's experience. No, it's not. It's something to manage the classes, manage the grades, manage assignments, manage the reports, and so on and so forth. The old boring back office stuff of the learning.
But many vendors are integrating, for instance, social media into what I've seen as LMSs to and therefore enabling more social interaction and maybe more engagement of the learner and where the learner feels that they are more comfortable inside that system. So is that integration taking place or?
Well, I think this is down to different vendors' strategies because there are vendors that want to create all the tools by themselves and kind of have the users, that is the learner and the teacher, use those tools that comes with LMS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one philosophy. The other philosophy could be to just deliver the core learning management tools from the vendor, but open up for all the beautiful and wonderful tools on the internet to integrate with them. And today it's this tool, tomorrow is a new tool, and enable the user to
right.
take advantage of new innovations happening on the internet.
Right. So it's
integrated with a back-end management system, because that's the whole thing. Even if you have new blog tools, wikis, Twitter, all these kind of new innovations that have come along, you still need to manage the class. You still need to manage the handouts. You still need to manage the grade book. This needs to be stored for a long time. It needs to be integrated with back-end student management systems. There's so many things that just have to happen, have to work at industrial scale every day in every class.
Right.
Dependent of the innovative tools you want to use when it comes to deliver the actual learning, because that's the differentiation, learning
right.
management and learning delivery.
Yeah.
And LMS is never designed for optimizing your learning delivery. So
is Schooler open then, so it can easily integrate with all these different tools that are out there that focus more on the learning process?
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing me back to that. So Schooler, we have phrased a new expression called LMT. And it's not just me. missing out LMS. LMT means learning management tools.
Okay.
So it's not a learning management system. And the reason why I say that is because Schooler is only really 10, 11 tools. That's it. And whereas Fronter had 100 tools at its heydays,
mm-hmm.
Schooler 10. Why? Because we don't need to create a calendar. We don't need to create an email client. We don't need to create a discussion forum functionality. We don't need to create a messaging. You don't need to create an archive. All this, what I call pen and paper tools, i.e. tools that are generic, everyone needs them, regardless whether you're a banker, a carpenter, or a teacher, or a student. You just need messaging. You need productivity tools, storing tools, messaging tools. Those tools are today delivered by the two giants, Google Apps or Microsoft Office 365. Those are really the two communication, productivity and storage platforms out there in the cloud. Google were first, but Microsoft is surely coming after.
Right.
The new era is to make those platforms become relevant for education, because Google and Microsoft doesn't come with the learning management tools that you need in order to manage the learning process. So that comes back to my comment to LMSs. You need
right.
to manage class, you need to manage assignment, assessment, grade books, all these kind of individual learning plans, reporting. In a school environment, you need a parental portal, and so on and so forth.
Right.
If you sum them up, you're talking 8 to 10 tools, core
yeah.
tools, that does not come with Office 365 or Google.
Yeah. It's really
those 10 tools that you plug on top of Office 365, and together, Schooler plus Office 365 becomes, so to say, your LMS. It delivers all the functionality you used to get from LMS earlier, obviously in a much more modern form, because the LMSs cannot possibly compete with, for instance, Office 365 or Google when it comes to emailing, calendaring, storing, productivity. So the LMSs are dead.
Yeah.
I think they have 1 to 3 years left. And those that go for tenders for traditional LMSs should really rethink whether they should consider a new approach.
Now, if we expand the horizon a little bit and our vision beyond some of the things we talked about, the LMSs and tools that can closely integrate with that, are there kind of white spaces that you see out there that you feel that Nordic edupreneurs should think about tackling, especially if they have global ambitions, which I think many of them do? Are there areas of learning, and since you referred earlier to focusing on the learning process and how people learn and learn differently, and so are there things out there that you think areas of opportunity that you think that people should think about?
Yeah, Yeah, because I think the learning management side of things are well taken care of. It used to be LMSs, right. Now it is what I refer to as the LMTs, learning management tool suites, such as Schooler. That's taken care of. There's not room for much innovation there, in my opinion. Right. So if you take what I said earlier, you should focus more on the ed in EdTech. Tech is just an enabler. It's really the ed that matters. So what is that? It's the teacher and the learner. If you look at research for schools, you'll see that almost any research report throughout any of the any year or any country where it's been conducted have concluded that what makes the biggest impact in improving teaching learning for the learner is to enable the teacher. Mm-hmm. Good teachers produces good learning for the learners. So if you take that, there's so much innovation to do in able to give teachers tools that makes the teacher more efficient, enables the teacher to reach out to more of their students, to go deeper into the conversation with each individual student, and so on and so forth. So adaptive learning, as an example. Adaptive mm-hmm. learning is, you can have an algorithm, a computer right. system, take some decisions in a split second based on some data that it acquires from the learner's journey through a course or something. That can be done in a split second by an algorithm.
Right.
A teacher can do the same thing. That's what a teacher is doing, looking at the student, assessing where they are, making a judgment and taking a decision, sitting down with the student and guiding them to where they should go next. Now, if you can free up that time, the simple stuff that algorithms can do, you free up the teacher to do the more important stuff.
Right.
So, in a little bit, automizing some of the tasks that teachers are doing, but not the management tasks such as filling in grades and so on. That's the learning management side. Go into the hardcore of teaching. And adaptive learning, I think, is really at the core. That's what a teacher is. It's a machine. A teacher is a machine for enabling adaptive learning. That's the role of a teacher, to go in and help each individual at their level.
Yeah.
So if some of that, just a little fraction of what the teacher is doing today, can be done by an app or a system or an algorithm, then that really releases an impact. I think that's a wide space which we just started to look at.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there are a lot of interesting things happening around analytics and adaptive learning. And in fact, I have colleagues at SRI who just written a report on some of that. So I think that's a topic I'm going to dive deeper into when I interview some of my colleagues from SRI who have spent a lot of time developing things on that. But
could I just add, there's one more thing. I think adaptive learning algorithms alone, I think, will only have limited impact. I think one also have to think through the content that is being used in connection together with it.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
I think the way we publish.
Yeah.
I think the publishers have a massive opportunity to go and radically rethink the way they package their content, make more simulations, use technology for whatever it's worth to get more engaging. And 21st century skills, I think, is a key here. The things that, encourage creativity, collaboration, critical thinking, create content and courses that really inspires and engages the student.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I think a lot of the big publishers in the Nordics and elsewhere are looking at that. In fact, I talked to someone at Gyllendal that are working now with Newton, and Gyllendal has kind of the content and the course expertise, and Newton has the learning analytics and so on. So it'll be interesting to see how that collaboration works out and what they can come up with. But I would like to move into, I know that many of our attendees in Kristiansand are also quite interested in hearing a little more from you as an investor, and put your investor hat on and share a little bit of your thinking on raising capital in the edtech industry, especially in the Nordic region. So what are some of the advice you can give these companies in terms of what they should be thinking about, preparing themselves to talk to investors about LearnTech? I think here in the Valley, we have a lot of investors who have quite a bit of experience around EdTech and are serial investors, but they're probably not as many in the Nordics. So how do you view the that situation in raising capital in the Nordics for EdTech companies?
Well, it comes back to what I said initially, that I think entrepreneurs should really make sure that the proposition, the value proposition they present really makes an impact on teaching and or learning, first and foremost. If you cannot demonstrate how your innovation or tool or whatever makes a difference, and not you shouldn't tell it. You should have teachers telling it if it's for the teaching, or learners telling it if it improves the learning experience. And demonstrate that it really materially improves the teaching experience or the learning experience. If you're able to do that, I'm pretty sure you would be pretty dumb if you're not able to convert that to money, to revenue. However, if you have a tool which isn't really making an impact on teaching and or learning, but you have a lot of PowerPoints and Excel spreadsheets, you know, it's you won't convert it, realize those spreadsheets to revenue, because your core value proposition is simply not good enough, not so good that a customer will pay for. So it really is about, are you producing material improvement in teaching and or learning?
Right.
Prove that first. And if you have proven that, or, I mean, if you can convince that that's the case, you will be in pole position to attract investors.
Yeah, I know that Pearson has made a big play on what they call efficacy of their products and so on over the last few years. I don't know how much progress they made on that, but I think you're right. I mean, if you can show that these products actually work, and I just talked to a friend of mine in Finland the other day, and he's working very closely with schools and researchers just to show, you know, that how the students are really benefiting from using the video tools that he has developed and how that's improving the learning process. I think
what you need to do is, I think one has to not use the traditional kind of B2C model where just get the eyeballs and it will work out. It doesn't work like that in education, because students are not paying, at least not in K-12.
Right.
Institutions are paying. So it doesn't matter if you have 1 million or 10 million or 50 million students that loves your product. If the institution doesn't see the value in the product, they won't pay for it. So there's a misunderstanding, in my opinion, that, oh, my product is so popular. Look at, we have 10 million users playing. We have this online game or whatever, which is used in so many classrooms. Yes, okay, fine, that's great. That's fantastic. How do you convert that to revenue?
Right.
I think you can only convert such a value proposition to revenue when teachers and school owners really see that you are changing the learning experience to the better. That will convert to revenue.
So it's not
the numbers of students. It is the evidence of improvement that I would be looking for.
So we have a good case in Norway now with Kahoot that have lots and lots of users, and I think 75% or so of them are in the United States. So at certain level, they're having a major impact. But do you think that they have good proof that the things are working in terms of the learning process and improving the learning outcomes for students, and therefore they can monetize it well? How do you see that?
Well, I'm a little bit too remote from Kahoot to comment on that, so I should be very careful. I'm really impressed by what Kahoot have been able to do and the engagement they have been able to get. But obviously, without knowing their business model or having studied them the last year or so, it comes back to what I earlier said. Having an impressively large amount of audience Right. Might be very good when you're a pro, when you're a B2C play, when you are when what you want is a subscription model from your end users.
Right.
But when it comes to K-12, I think that's less important. It is to what I said, demonstrate teaching and learning outcomes. So Kahoot in that case might be a victim of that. I don't know. So I shouldn't say too much because it really would not give them justice. But if Kahoot is able to monetize on it, then they surely should have a massive opportunity to do it because they have so many people using it.
Yeah.
But the proof in the pudding is going to be the ad in the ad tech.
Right, right. So we talked about some of the things in terms of lessons learned that you have seen, and maybe many of these companies out there are not focused sufficiently on the education or the learning part, and they get excited about the technology. But are there other mistakes that you have seen, you know, startup companies make, and what kinds of lessons have you seen when you look at these companies out there? Are there, and what kind of advice beyond what you already said that they should be paying attention to as a as they try to scale and expand their operations?
Sure, I should be careful to phrase it as advices, but I can share some reflections at least
right.
based on my experience. But you should take it for what it is. But I think if you talk education, so what, are you talking higher ed or K-12? Because there's very different ways, buying behaviors, the customer is different, the user might be the same, the learner,
right.
the teacher.
And you also have corporate learning that a lot of people ignore. There's some low-hanging fruits, I think, in corporate learning as well.
Yeah, I know that. I couldn't comment too much on that because that's an area I really not haven't worked on.
Right.
So I need to kind of just refer back to higher ed or K-12. I think the most important difference on those two is that in K-12, students never buy your product. Very seldom teachers buy your product, and if they do, it's going to be in very low scales.
Right.
It is the school or often the school owner, so the municipality, for instance. In higher ed, it's different. In higher ed, predominantly, it's students that pays for a content or a book or an app or whatever. Sometimes institution, but when institution pays for it, it's normally when it's kind of back hardcore infrastructure such as an LMS. You can only have one LMS at an institution, so therefore the institution buys it. But when it comes to the particular content you're using in a course, it's up to the professor to choose it, and the students have to buy it. So
right.
one has to appreciate that the business models are very different in higher ed and K-12. And I think a big mistake is that one doesn't really get, here's the user, and he's the customer. And
right.
you need to figure out the difference on the user and the customer. K-12, the customer is the school or the school owner, the user is the teacher and the student. Whereas in higher ed, the customer and the user might be the same person, namely the student. And then you have, who's the decision maker? In higher ed, the decision maker might be the professor.
Right.
He's not the user and he's not the customer, but he's the decision maker. Whereas in K-12, you might find that the user, the decision maker, and the customer is three different entities. So understanding those things, what you need to deliver is value to the user.
Yeah.
To convince the decision maker, and you send the invoice to the customer. And sometimes I see people mix those things, and then it normally doesn't go so well. The other thing I see is that, and particularly in K-12, where I have by far the most experience, is that you really need scale.
Yeah.
Really, really need scale. I think I can take it so bluntly that focusing on one small country such as a Nordic country, you would just run out of users or customers very quickly. You need to think international day one, unless you want to be a publisher and kind of more traditional publisher, a business more innovative maybe, but traditional publishing. So scale is key. Internationalization is key. But you have to appreciate that buying processes are often very long. sales cycles, at least if you go to more institutional sales, such as selling to municipalities or a group of schools.
Yeah.
It can be years. It can be 2-3 years. And very often you end up in tenders. So you lose control, so to say, of the selling process. So that's important to understand, not only, as I said, who's the customer, who's the decision maker, and who's the user, but also what is the process. And I also see that priorities varies very much from country to country, and that's very often predicted by the politicians or the pedagogical or educational establishment in that country have certain focus areas. So in Norway for the moment is this, whereas in the UK for the moment is something else. And so one has to really understand what is the country where your schools are sitting, what's
right.
the country's priorities? Because if you're not listening to that, the schools might be enthusiastic, it's just that they don't have money to pay for it because they don't get budgets for it.
Yeah.
So understanding all these things, I think it's equally important as your actual product. So really
yeah.
deep dive into this.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges there, and it's a complex world in which these entrepreneurs need to navigate. And as you say, particularly when you go internationally, understanding all these complexities in these different markets. So, if you in the last question I have for you, for you to look into your crystal ball, and given what you've seen over the last 5 years, and if you look ahead now, 3 to 5 years. What do you see? I think you are at least somewhat optimistic based on what you already said. Do you see some areas? Do you think that, for instance, the analytics thing is going to play out in a significant way in the next 2 to 3 years and so on, and really cause some significant new areas of opportunity?
Well, what I'm going to say now is half is definitely going to be wrong. My problem is that I don't know which half.
So, no, I know.
So it's a really difficult question. But I think we touched upon it initially. The era of the LMSs are gone.
Yeah.
So if you're an LMS and you haven't disrupted your own business model and your own product offering, you better do it quickly because you are about to be disrupted. So Schooler will kill Fronter, which I founded. Just because the world had moved on. I think that's a big change, and we just are at the beginning of that. And I think it will take 5 years for that shift to happen. This I'm pretty certain will happen. And the reason for that is because the biggest software company throughout all times, called Microsoft, have finally figured out the cloud strategy. They have a new CEO. They have a very, very strong focus on their cloud strategy, which is Office 365 and Azure. And their products offering are starting to be really good, and it's for free for education worldwide. Microsoft say that they will grow to 1 billion users in Office 365 within 1 to 2 years from now. They are already at 350 or 380 million users. So that will have an impact for sure. We haven't scratched the surface yet. That will change the way teachers use technology, because today teachers uses LMSs for managing tasks such as managing the class, managing the messaging, managing the gradebook, etc. But in the LMSs, they are also forced to use the LMSs calendar, the LMSs internal messaging system, the file archive in the LMS, the text editor in the LMS, and obviously those are tools that are nowhere near what Office 365 from Microsoft, or Google for that sake, Google Apps can offer today. So clearly, once you have those 8 to 10 core learning management tools plugged on top of Office 365, the institutions are ready to shut down the LMS. And when they shut down the LMS, a lot of innovation will happen, I think, because suddenly you can go to App Store. If you use Office 365, you have App Store from Microsoft. If you have Google, you have App Store from Google. And you have tens of thousands of apps which you in one click can integrate into your education. You don't have to talk with your LMS vendor and beg them to integrate it. You don't have to wait for the IT department to integrate it. You don't have to do anything. You just go to App Store, say install, and that new app is now part of your course. That app doesn't need to be only functionality, it can be content. So publishers will start to publish what used to be books and then ebooks and then maybe courses. They will start to publish that on Microsoft's Marketplace and Microsoft Store and on Google Store. And this will enrich education and enable teachers themselves to really start using these innovative tools out there, which obviously gives an opportunity for edtech entrepreneurs to create new type of apps, new type of innovative courses or contents that can be easily installed on top of Office 365, where the teacher will be in the future. So I think reflecting on what Office 365 and Google Apps will do once the LMSs are being shut off, I think there's going to be a massive amount of room for innovation there.
Yeah, that's and really...
And also coming to your, you mentioned analytics. I mean, who is bigger on analytics than Google and Microsoft? I mean, they're storing more data than anyone else in the world, and they have analytic tools left, right, and center for you to exploit and to take advantage of. And so it's already there, waiting to be used. So I think you will see an explosion there. But forget LMS, the traditional silo, which 10 years ago, to be frank, I started an LMS, I grew an LMS, and 10 years ago there were no alternative, because there were no tools on the internet you could just go and drag and drop and it worked together. We had to create all the tools in an integrated system in order to have it to work. There were no email in the cloud, there were no Twitter or Facebook or shared docs. So in defense of the LMSs, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it was massively innovative. 10 years ago, it was still necessary. 5 years ago, the world had moved on. Today, they are dead. But it will take 5 years for them to die.
That's fascinating. I think that we're going to be discussing many of these things with Peter Norvik, senior research director at Google, who is coming to Kristiansand. And so we'll be discussing some of these things with him, and I'm sure that he can help us understand a little more about what Google has in mind and what they plan in this new world that you're describing here. I wish you could have been there, but I know you're going to be out sailing and enjoying yourself. But I really appreciate you taking the time, Roger, to share some of your ideas. You have tremendous experience in this area, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy hearing it. So thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, bye.
Bye.